Shank Bagley. Shank Bagley. Shank Bagley. Hello and welcome to Shatbaggily, an old Lincolnshire adjective to describe absolutely anything loose and disorderly, which sums up this Lincolnshire lass quite nicely, as I do tend to go off on a tangent every so often. In a moment, we'll talk rewilding and cooking ideas for a vegan Christmas. First though, with it being episode 25, here are a few other things with the same number. Percentage weight loss of a blue whale as she nurses her calf during the 7-month lactation period. Meters span of the longest cobweb, or 85 feet, woven by a species of Madagascan spider known as Darwin's bark spider, which was only discovered 12 years ago. It weaves them over flowing rivers stretching from one bank to the opposite bank, so two wonderful examples of nature being incredible. And so for the final one, us humans. Here you go. The most boiled egg swallowed and regurgitated in 1 minute. Achieved by Gurish Kumar in Bangalore, India in 2013. Oh well. Trust all is good wherever you are tuning in around the world. Thanksgiving yesterday, so hope a good one. Been a busy week this end, a lot of eating somehow. We've either gone to friends or they've come to us, and we've been trying out lots of new recipes, which I love doing. Not for the waistline, but hey. Good news, having visited the osteopath, my pelvis hasn't slipped, so I'm all right for another 3 months at least. Time for our first guests, and it's the pioneering couple Kim and Rob Hurst from Worcestershire, who have recently retired their cottage herbary business after 47 years of growing award-winning organic peat-free herbs and cottage garden plants. They haven't stopped altogether, as the nursery continues to be used by their daughter India for her hugely successful business, Vervain Flowers, and alongside her partner Christopher, the four of them are on a journey of renaturalising the 60-acre family farm Kim and Rob live on. It began 3 years ago, but what does it mean?
It's natural regeneration because we want the ground to go back to what it should be. So scrub is a word that everybody hates because they think it's going to be untidy, but that is actually the natural thing. We want small shrubs, hawthorn, brambles, and it to look untidy because that is what the small birds, small mammals want more than anything. You don't want big expanses of open land or masses of closed canopy forest. Because closed canopy forest contains wildlife, but only a small percentage of what scrub would have a large percentage of.
So are we taking it back to where we would have been, what, how many years ago are we talking?
You can't go back in time. You can't redo because everything's man-made. You can't say, I'm going to put it back to how it would have been, because unless you're going to turn it into volcanoes and molten metal, you can't go back to the original start, because everything we have, especially in Britain, is man-made. There's no wild areas left in Britain.
At all?
No. No. All the Scottish Highlands, grouse moors, deer. The Lake District is all sheep and tourists. So you haven't got anywhere actually wild. Like, you look at it, Wyre Forest is a very old forest, but they were oak trees planted to grow timber to make boats, make warships to sail in the seas by men. Everywhere has been affected by man, but a lot of it has been polluted by man. Everywhere, wherever you look, there's massive areas of plastic floating around in the Pacific Ocean. It's all man has done intense damage everywhere. So us doing our natural regeneration, we're trying to provide a little oasis for a few birds, a few mammals, and that's it.
So Just going to the beginning for you, though, this was or is still agricultural land. What were you growing on it before you renaturalised the area?
Very, very recently, it was corn and maize. Before that, it was hops. Before that, it was orchards and grass. So if you look at it, in the last 70 years, it's gone from orchards and grass to hop yards, to corn ground, to maize, to be chopped up and fed to digesters to make green energy.
So now you've said, that's it, we are going to take her back. Well, no, not take her back, give her back.
Yeah. Give back the little bit of ground we've got to the few wild things that are still here. If you go back 5 years, we probably had 2 or 3 pairs of goldfinches. This summer, we've had 200 or 300 goldfinches flying around.
Wow. And that's in such a short space of time.
We used to have a couple of pairs of skylarks. We now have about 8 pairs of skylarks. So out there this morning, I was watching 2 kestrels fly around. We've had an odd kestrel here now and again. If you came back tomorrow morning, I could guarantee you could wander out there and the 2 kestrels would be there. Mm. It has been made more possible because Christopher's built a proper kestrel box and they're using that as theirs now.
I suppose it's like anything. If you're going to do something like this, it's not a case of you stop doing something. You have to create something.
You can't, with rewilding, you can't just stop. Like some people have said, they've just stopped and they've done they haven't done anything. They've had to come back on its own. Right. But it will come back and it will come back over time. We've tried to help ours move along as fast as possible. So mainly because of us, because we're getting old and we want to see something happen.
So what was it? Because you've both semi-retired, haven't you? You didn't want to totally retire. Is this something you've always wanted to do, or is it something that's come to your attention sort of over the last few years?
It's something we've always wanted to do, most definitely. We would have liked to have done it much earlier. And we have the bones to begin with. We'd got quite a few really old hedges. You know, we didn't grow about all the hedges out like a lot of other people did. We kept a lot of our hedges. We also have, through the centre of the land, 8 acres of woodland, of which there are veteran trees in. It's mixed woodland. Within that woodland, you know, we've got biodiversity going on within there. We've got lots of different types of plant material that are grown there, lots of different types of fungi that are growing in there. We have a stream that runs through, we have a bog area, we have other areas that got of the farm that are wetland as well. So we'd already got a bone going on through there, you know, of which to actually build on. So we knew that this could actually happen. And the fact that India and her partner, Christopher, got very on board with this made it even more of a want, because it means it will continue once we're not here. Mm. You know, and that's really important to us. We didn't want to start this without it being a continual thing. And they will actually carry it on.
One of the additions that you've had on recently, in the form of pigs, 2 Tamworth pigs, which are quite the closest we can get to an ancient breed. Tell us a little bit what the pigs are going to be doing for you.
The pigs basically are going to plough the ground instead of us having a tractor and a plough. They're going to dig it up. They're going to loosen it, break up the grass, make it so that trees can seed, wildflowers can seed. We're planting some perennial wildflowers in the grass so that when the pigs dig up areas, hopefully next year, those seeding plants will have somewhere to grow. Certain things will only grow in certain areas, like grey willow will only grow in bare ground. So if the pigs make bare ground, there's a chance that the willows can seed in there and grow. So hopefully the pigs will break up the grass and the sward so that other things can come in and grow.
And I guess the pigs are the only fertiliser as well as they do their business?
We don't need fertiliser. We don't want fertiliser. In actual fact, we put in to build a proper wildflower meadow, but we couldn't get funding for it or support for it because once the soil tests were done, it was too fertile. Yeah, so we don't want fertility. We're hoping that the pigs, we've got quite a lot, we've got too much clover in the swards and pigs like clover. So we're hoping that the pigs will eat the clover and dig it up to stop it growing. We're trying to get rid of that agricultural fertility so that there's only in the ground what the wildflowers and the scrubland want because they don't want to grow big. We don't want massive, we don't want sort of forestry commission trees. We want trees of different sizes, different types, so that we can have different species living in those trees.
It's fascinating. It kind of reminds me a little bit about the organic route where you have to be so many years before you can be classified as organic. Is it similar with renaturalisation? It takes a certain year before it's officially natural?
Not really, because there is nothing natural.
Even after a certain amount of time.
If we carry on doing this for 20, 30 years, you can't say that what's out there is natural because it's always going to have its legacy as agricultural land. If you look at it in Britain, what is actually natural? Everything, if you look at moorland, if you look at Exmoor, Dartmoor, they've been grazed, they've been managed, they're not natural. You know, if you look at it, where in the world is actually natural? So the only thing I can think of is sort of the Arctic or the Antarctic, and that's disappearing.
One thing I loved in the pictures following you on Instagram is the beehive that you got earlier in the year. Wow, what a structure. So a gentleman made it. It's phenomenal. It's quite big as well.
Yeah. It's called a rocket hive. And a lovely guy called Matt came out and he makes them. And he along with Rob erected it, and within sort of 5 minutes of it being up, we had wild bees coming to it, and that's what we've got in there, a colony of wild bees, and that's what it was for, actually attracting wild bees, not honey bees to it. That again is adding another dimension to our whole scheme of things. You know, we're getting another wild species that's coming into the land, and we were just amazed at how quickly that happened. It was incredible, but it's beautiful because, you know, it's on its three legs and the big tree trunk, and then that lovely piece of thatching that's on the top, and then it's topped off by this lovely piece of pottery on the top, which Matt's wife made to go on the top of it. Yeah, it's a great addition. It's a great addition. And of course, you know, the bees are feeding on the wild blossom that's in the hedges and the old orchard that we've got down there of the fruit trees that are in there. They're very old varieties. It was actually planted in Victorian times, that little orchard down there. So they've got that to feed on. And then there's the wildflowers that are growing around that, you know, the bees are feeding on also.
And the wildflowers, you've got to be careful with the pigs because they will more than happy quite root them up. But you were saying, Rob, about there's a ratio of pigs to acreage, because 50 plus acres for two pigs, I thought, well, that's amazing. You've got too many.
That's too many, yeah. We should really have had one pig on the area that we've got because we haven't got a big enough area for more. But we thought that, because pigs are social, there should be two, not one. So, and it's worked out really well because the two that we've got, they literally are side by side, totally. They sleep together, they feed together. And if the one wanders off, the other one turns round, notices they're not side by side and races back to the side. So, you know, they've been here, what, three weeks.
Yes.
Yeah, 3 weeks. And they've become really happy. They're gradually getting more and more to the extremities of the farm. They haven't gone all of the way yet, but they are gradually getting further and further. And they've got three areas now where they've found where it's dry soil and they can sleep at night.
Oh, how lovely.
Where are we in the scheme of things in this country? Is renaturalisation big elsewhere in the world? Are we catching on?
There's a lot of wild areas in Europe. There's a large area in Holland that I can't pronounce that is a coastal area, and it's got a really long name to it. That was sort of rewilded, let go back, and it's become sort of an iconic area. It's got lots of large animals on it now, and it's sort of a coastal area, and it's a long, thin area down the side of Holland. But if you then go further into Eastern Europe, there's a lot of very ancient forests, and there's a lot of areas where we stand outside and you look at a couple of swallows and you go, oh, fantastic, they've come back, and they've got 200. And that's how it used to be in Britain. And because those places haven't been developed agriculturally, there's a lot more to it. There's more native wild areas rather than man-made wild areas. So especially, yeah, bears, wolves, yeah,
and lynx.
Poland's got some ancient forests, and Romania, especially in Transylvania.
Mm.
Transylvania is good. So we've got a friend who goes out on his motorbike and rides across there, and he said you can ride for miles and miles and miles, and you see no fences, no animals, no nothing, just wildflowers and wild animals.
Good. So
there are still areas like that, but because populations are growing, they're disappearing.
So in the UK, there's you. Are you leading the way, or are there others similar?
Oh, there's quite a few others. And the big one is NEP. And NEP is sort of the forerunner of a lot of the natural regeneration and, you know, the word rewilding. And that is the leader of this particular type of regeneration. And there are a lot of small people as well, you know, 10, 12 acres that they're doing this for. And the good thing is there's becoming neighbours that are doing this and creating the corridors, which are really, really important, that you have these corridors so that the animals and the insect life and the bees and things can have a continual source of, you know, the wildness.
You're not having any wild animals here, are you?
No, we haven't got, well, I don't know, what do you class as wild animals? yeah, we've got wild birds, we've got
lots of little mammals, we've got, you know, shrews, voles, mice, obviously.
We've got roe deer, we've got muntjacs.
Yeah. The old foxes coming through.
We've on the camera. We've there was a polecat,
which is really good. So you've seen a stoat.
Yeah,
weasel. We've seen weasels. We know we definitely got weasels.
Yeah, I came face to face with a stoat down the drive, and he was stood up on his back legs.
We've got hedgehogs.
Hind legs looking at us.
We've got hedgehogs, and we've got barn owls. You know, they've produced one clutch in 1 year. They produced two clutches. So we're very honoured to have that. That's amazing. But we've also got a big bat population. You know, we get lots of moths when we do a moth check.
Yeah.
We get good 100 moths in the moth trap. You know,
and also this summer we have had a lot of butterflies.
Yeah, they're coming back, and that's one of the things we wanted to get back, wasn't it? The butterflies.
Yeah, we had a burst where literally every field you walked into, there was 10 or 12 gatekeeper butterflies in there.
But no bears.
No bears.
No, the big thing would be bears and wolves, but I think 60 acres is not quite big enough.
The local population wouldn't be too pleased with us for that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And also we'd have to make the fences slightly higher.
Thank goodness, no wolves. Lions and tigers and bears, oh my. Kim and Rob doing their bit for wildlife in their corner of North Worcestershire, which will continue with their daughter India and partner Christopher. That's what I call a legacy. A fascinating subject, and a couple of things mentioned. KNEP, which is spelt K-N-E-P-P, it's the south of the country in Sussex. And the Wyre Forest in Worcestershire is the largest woodland nature reserve in the country. I'll put all the details on Shat Bagley's Instagram and Facebook pages, both of KNEP, and also pictures of Kim and Rob's pigs, who are called Miss Patty, who's 4 years old, and Babette, who is two. Now, I meant to say, if you're looking forward to my interview with Saku off Bake Off fame, that will be next week, as Love Productions were a little concerned of what we might say. Our little podcast making waves, eh? Love it. And if you follow Shat Bagley's social media, you may have seen my video message explaining the reason why. Thank you ever so much indeed for getting in touch via that. It's been a while since I've done one of those for you, and I've also avoided having my picture taken, and I don't think I've told you why. It stems from my Botox, which I had for medical reasons. I do tend to grate my teeth. So I shred mouth guards, my sinuses hurt, the masseter muscle is extremely sore. So, yeah, I had to have medical Botox to alleviate the symptoms, which I did back in May of this year. And it was good. It worked. But unfortunately, it affected my smile. So I lost it on both sides, not at the same time. The one side went within sort of 2-3 weeks, and then the other one followed. One came back 2 months later, but I've only just been able to smile as me last week or so. So 6 months after the procedure. So did lose the old confidence for a little while, but I'm doing okay now. I shall do more of those from now on. And no, I will not be having masseter Botox done again. Something that did make me smile, and I was able to, was an old recipe book I came across called The Yorkshire Way, which includes recipes from people in the county. So, for instance, near Leeds, Mrs. Umpleby, who has to have the most fantastic name, so whether it's made up, I don't know, Mrs. Umpleby recommends her vinegar cakes, which I've never heard of before, but similar to a traditional fruit cake, I think, looking at the ingredients, flour, sugar, lard, currants, sultanas, mixed peel, half a nutmeg, carbonate of soda, milk, and 1.5 cupfuls of vinegar. My favourite, though, is Miss Cartwright of Dewsbury, with a wholesome fruit cake, which she describes as being good for children, as it's being gently laxative. Ah, yes, the first thing I look for in a cake. Don't worry, I shall pop both recipes on our Instagram and Facebook pages, but perhaps don't make Miss Cartwright's. Time for our next guest, and it's Lizzie Hughes from Our Lizzie Vegan Cookery School in Worcestershire. Open to all, regardless of cooking ability, and you don't have to be vegetarian or vegan to enjoy them. I spoke with Lizzie earlier, who had just finished putting her Christmas tree up ready for a Christmas class on Sunday. But what are they doing?
Christmas dinner. So starters, mains and desserts, plus mince pies and things to start. Ooh. So the full shebang, yeah.
So are we having people from all over the country, or are they all local to you?
Locals, this one. No overseas guests for this one.
You too get them from all over, don't you?
That's right. Yeah, I had my lovely lady from near Boston in the summer. She came for a cookery holiday, and a lovely chap from India recently. And he bought me lots of lovely, it's South Indian herbs and spices, which I've got to have a play with. There's always something new to learn with food, though, isn't there?
Yeah. So your lady from Boston, I'm guessing Boston, Massachusetts, not Boston, Lincolnshire.
Yeah, Boston, Massachusetts. Yeah, so she had 3 courses in the summer and she stayed and took around the hills as well. Yeah, she loved it.
I bet. So intrigued then. So Christmas dinner, you're doing this course. Is this an insight into how what you're serving on Christmas Day then as well, Lizzie?
Yeah, it'd be the same sort of thing. I mean, we usually have a quiet one, me and my husband, but I'm doing a fundraising dinner just before Christmas with a big house full for the local RSPCA dog kennels. So it'll be very similar to that. So, yeah, Christmas feast.
So what's on the menu?
So Sunday, we're doing some starters. We've got a nice little smoked tofu plate with roasted peppers and pistachio nuts. Mm. And then we're having a play with phyllo and doing phyllo baskets with mushrooms in a creamy and white wine sauce. So that'll be their starters. Mm. And then we're doing about five mains. So traditional nut roast, cashew and carrot with dill. And then we've got a pivier, we've got a strudel, some phyllo money bags, so having a play with phyllo again. And then lots of ideas for side dishes and a couple of puddings as well. So, yeah, just giving people ideas. But sometimes people come who maybe don't have to cook for a big family, and it's just nice to come on a course, be with other people and sit and enjoy a meal afterwards. So different reasons that bring people.
And as we always say, you don't have to be vegan or vegetarian to enjoy the courses.
Well, that's right. Yeah. So some of the people who come in will be vegan and vegetarian, and some of them are just looking for something different. With the Christmas ones, sometimes people come who are panicking a bit if they've got relatives or, you know, sons and daughters with new partners. And I think people seem to get a bit panicky, don't they, sometimes at Christmas when it's all beautiful on the telly and they think they've got to have the same at home. Well, actually, it's just about being together as well, isn't it? But yeah, so it's nice for people to come and get ideas of how to impress their vegetarian and vegan visitors.
You'd have been very proud of me the last weekend, Lizzie. We had some friends round, and one of which was a vegetarian, and I was doing ever so well. I really was. You would have been proud of me, but there was nearly a slip up. And it must happen all the time. Oh, yeah. So I made carrot maple syrup soup, which also has ginger in, which I have to say is the most beautiful recipe. So I did all the usual, stuffed the onions and the carrots and the syrup in the oven, you know, for an hour or whatever. And then I separated it out. Now, fortunately, our little liquidizer's on the way out. So I had to do it in batches. And it was only after the second batch, having used chicken stock, that I suddenly thought, oh, vegetarian. Yes. I know, but it's so easy, easy to do, isn't it?
It's just simple tweaks. It's, things like stock or cooking your roasters in lovely rapeseed oil rather than goose fat. You know, it's simple tweaks that we can all do. And it's easy done, isn't it, when people are entertaining.
And I only had one veg stock left, so it was all right. Ooh. And I had saved enough of the carrot and the onion. Oh, dear. But I thought to myself, that was so close. So close. Yeah.
Yes.
But, oh, dear.
Now, you won't do that again.
I won't do that again. Yeah, I know. So you yourself, how long have you been a vegan?
34 years now.
Incredible.
Scary. I know. I'll have to stop telling people because they'll start wondering how old I am, won't they?
But when you started 34 years ago, the difference that must have been then to what there is now. Can you remember those early days?
Yeah. You didn't have as much choice in the kind of supermarkety things, but growing up in Wolverhampton, you know, we had all different cultures, and we had fabulous huge health food shop that sold everything. You know, some of the things you sort of think, oh, I wish we could still get that now, and you reminisce, you know. So there were some good products, but yeah, you had to cook. There wasn't all the ready meals and all of this kind of thing, but you know, that was great because that started me on my cooking journey, feeding myself when I first became vegetarian and vegan. So, you know, things like the non-dairy pantry, you know, there'd be perhaps one choice of soy milk and one margarine. You wouldn't see the cheeses and the creams and all the fancy stuff. You know, it's really, really developed. Mm. We've got a dizzying amount of choice now, haven't we? It's great to be able to go and pick things up. But there's still lots to make, isn't there? Mm. Yeah. It's like I still make the nut roast. Because back in the day, I used to love going to London to the shows, and we'd always have lunch at Crank's, which was an old-fashioned vegetarian whole food place. There was a nice one in Covent Garden, so it was perfect for the shows. But again, it was all the kind of hominy pies, quiches, all those kind of raised pies. But again, with people baking more, all those things have come back into people's consciousness, haven't they? Mm. And actually, you know, it doesn't seem so old hat. You know, it's nice to be able to make things.
So going back to those times, did you ever in a position where you were able to go out for a meal? Because I'm thinking that,
you know, not so much at Christmas. I mean, some of the Christmas do's were dreadful. I used to work as a teacher. So you'd end up going to a big hotel, corporate do, and you'd have a bit of melon to start with if you were lucky. And then you'd maybe have some veg and some rice. And then the melon would be wheeled out again, maybe with a strawberry popped on top, the dessert. But you know what it's like, those kind of corporate things. But yeah, it used to be a standing joke. What will Lizzie have this year? Yeah, you'd have to ply yourself with drink first. Yeah, so that kind of food was hard. But yeah, going out, you know, Chinese, Indian, Turkish, all those interesting restaurants. And obviously, back in the day, lots of interesting small independent vegetarian and vegan cafes. But yeah, the corporate, especially at Christmas, it was not good. And I mean, I bake. I mean, how many mince pies am I going to make? I do not know. This year, you know, you always count, lose count. But, you know, being able to have shop bought things, you could, there wasn't the opportunity. No. You know, everything had ingredients that weren't suitable. So it's nice, you know, to pop to a coffee shop and treat. I had my first mince pie yesterday in a coffee shop.
Oh,
so.
Oh.
Good. Good.
So how many, 34 years ago, were any of your friends, any of your family joining you on this journey? Or did you ever get invited?
My family, no, but a lot of friends that we had in common. And my husband, when I met him, he was vegan also. So we just kind of hung about in a group. Obviously, my work colleagues weren't, you know, different groups of friends and different things, really. But yeah, it's interesting now how it's just so much more accessible and more talked about, really. Mm. You know, everywhere you go, there are vegan options.
Yeah.
So it's all inclusive. And it's not necessarily, there are more vegans about, but there's more people eating that way part of the week. You know, so it's never increasing thing.
Yeah, like a meat-free day or something. I'm with you. So,
yes, that's right.
Just going back then to your recipes, you mentioned mince pies. Would it be very naughty of me to ask you to share your mince pie recipe, or is it top secret?
Oh, no, it's fine. It's actually on my website.
Ah.
And there's a little old-fashioned film of me making it. I think that's 10 years old, but a bit rusty. I like to use a little bit of self-raising flour as well as plain flour. It gives the pastry a little bit of lift. And I use the old-fashioned White Fact Trex with the sunflower margarine too. And I like to put a bit of lemon zest or orange zest into the pastry. Obviously, you can buy pastry, but it's so easy to make your own, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then mincemeat, I do make my mincemeat, so it's soaking in brandy as we speak. But, I mean, it's easy enough. I and add things too if you want to do that. And I love marzipan. Probably by the end of December, I'll be half human and half marzipan. So I like to put a little nugget of marzipan into my mince pie just on the side.
Oh.
And I like to do a star on the top rather than a full pastry top. I like a star because then it's kind of more mincemeat. Sometimes it's too much pastry, isn't it?
And with you on the pastry, I like when I make my my pastry to put a bit of orange in. I think it's stunning.
Yeah.
It lifts it.
Yeah, just lifts it nicely, doesn't it?
Yeah. So
yeah,
the idea of the marzipan, I like that. Where did that come from?
Yeah. I don't know. You know how you just think, was that my idea in the first place? Maybe I saw it in a magazine back in the day, but yeah, I've been doing it for years. Tiny nuggets, sort of fingernail size on the side. Huh. I mean, you can do a full marzipan star on the top, but I just think a nugget's nice.
Yeah, well, I like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, yeah. And then what would you say store cupboard must-haves for being a vegan, Lizzie? What would you say?
Yeah, well, I like to keep the vacuum-packed chestnuts. They're really, really convenient to use. You know, there are a few companies that do them and you just open them and use them. So I do a nice chestnut and red pepper strudel. So again, if you've got the jars of roasted red peppers in, that makes a really quick filling, you know, for puff pastry. Obviously, you can make your own. We've watched them on Bake Off. The packets that you can buy ready done are great, ready rolled sheets. So that's a really, really good staple. You can buy thin soy creams and thick soy creams, and they're just in the fridge, so you can mix them with your mushrooms, do your garlic mushrooms, or you can pour them on top of desserts and things. So that's a nice staple. nuts and things like that, ready for your nut roasts. I love chestnuts in all forms, and I like the sweetened chestnut puree, which is sometimes a bit tricky to get. So you can get the regular chestnut puree, and then if you keep some maple syrup or some icing sugar, you can sweeten your own, because I like making a cheesecake with that. That's one of my kind of signature desserts at Christmas. So you have a Bourbon biscuit base, and then you have your cream cheese. I use the vegan cream cheese. And then you have your sweetened chestnut puree, and it's lush.
Oh.
I could eat it all myself. Yeah, so it's just nice. So things like that. You know, I think sometimes you don't want something too elaborate. If it's simple and it sits in the fridge and it's ready, it's kind of a good go-to. Christmas pudding trifle's another nice one as well.
Oh.
Do you ever made that?
Christmas pudding trifle. So instead, what? So you put Christmas pudding in the base of your trifle?
Yeah, so you can buy a Christmas pudding or use leftovers, orange jelly, mandarins, tinned or fresh left.
Yeah.
And then you've got your custard layer and your cream layer, and then some little orange segments on the top and some almonds.
Ooh.
And maybe if you've got some Cointreau hanging about, put that on the Christmas pudding before you make the trifle up. It's delicious.
Yeah, it sounds it. Yeah. So we know you're going to be having a good time over Christmas. What's your favourite part of this time of year, Lizzie?
I'm actually really enjoying myself today. It feels a bit stressy getting all the boxes out of the loft and starting it all off. But I don't know, there's something about getting the tree up, getting the lights working or not working. They are working. And then all those Christmas decorations that are the memories of all the places and the people that you've known over the years. And then just, I don't know, starting up. I think sometimes at the end of Christmas, it all gets a bit kind of, cluttered and like everything's everywhere. But I just think the freshness and the start, the start of December is just such a wonderful time. The first of everything.
Yeah.
That's special for me.
So when your guests arrive, will they be, obviously they'll see the tree and doing the Christmas lunch, will you have Christmas music playing?
It depends on them. Yeah, we might do actually. Yeah, get some Christmas music on. Yeah. Yeah, I've got a party food course as well next week. So we're doing lots of nibbly bits, and they're regular customers. So yeah, I reckon they'll be Christmas music people.
Is it too soon to wish you a happy Christmas, Lizzie?
Oh, thank you. No, I've had my first Christmas card today from the window cleaner. So yeah, I don't think it's too soon at all.
Lizzie Hughes from Our Lizzie Cookery School in Malvern, Worcestershire, with some incredible vegan ideas, including her mince pies recipe, and sounds like her guests will certainly enjoy themselves this Sunday. Thank you to Lizzie, Kim and Rob, and pictures of the pigs, kestrel boxes and beehive will be posted alongside the mince pie recipe, plus website information on Shap Bagley's Facebook and Instagram pages. And you can message me there or email podcast@theshapbagley.co.uk. And thank you again for getting in touch. Sorry I've not been able to mention you all, but I do read every one of them, and it's you who keep me keeping Shap Bagley going. With that in mind, please follow or subscribe to the podcast. Totally free, no funny business. And the more followers we get, the more guests we can attract. And thank you to those who have done that the last few days. And yes, Saku from the Great British Bake Off will be with me, I promise, next Friday. So that's it for another week. Thank you for listening and see you next time. Oh, and don't forget, if you're making Christmas puddings, it's Stir Up Sunday this weekend.